This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Air Force General Michael Hayden appears before the Senate Intelligence Committee on Thursday for confirmation hearings as President Bush's nominee to head the Central Intelligence Agency. The former head of the National Security Agency was already expected to face sharp questions. Critics on Capitol Hill, both Democrats and Republicans, have raised concern about a military officer in charge of a civilian intelligence agency. There are also questions about General Hayden and warrantless wiretaps. President Bush says General Hayden proposed what the administration likes to call its terrorist surveillance program, intercepting calls and emails of people associated with al-Qaeda without warrants when one of the parties is outside of the United States. Then last week, USA Today reported that under General Hayden's direction, the NSA collected telephone records of millions of Americans. Over the weekend, the New York Times reported that immediately after the September the 11th attacks, Vice President Cheney wanted to authorize the NSA to eavesdrop on purely domestic calls and emails without first getting a court order. According to the report, that recommendation was overruled by NSA lawyers. And in a Washington Post ABC News poll taken on Friday, a majority of Americans said that they found the NSA program to be an acceptable way to investigate terrorism. Later in the program, Darfur and Genocide, on the Talk of the Nation opinion page, the former director of the Africa program at the Council on Foreign Relations argues that the word genocide is neither accurate nor helpful in Darfur. But first, the NSA surveillance and the nomination of General Hayden. If you have questions about the scope of the programs, what the information is used for, and whether it's legal, give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by former NSA Director, retired Admiral Bobby Ray Inman, and we'll talk with the ranking Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee, Patrick Leahy of Vermont. But first, joining us now from her office in New York is Leslie Cawley, the reporter who broke last week's story in USA Today. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you.
News about the NSA collecting information on phone calls and emails sent into and out of the country has been reported before last week on other papers, the New York Times, the Washington Post. Your story really had a lot of new information about the scope of this operation.
Yes, this is a completely different focus, which is to say entirely domestic calls, meaning those that originate and terminate within U.S. borders. What the New York Times reported on was the international program, which involved actual wiretapping, listening in on a recording, conversations of calls going from to or from this country. And again, this program, the domestic program, domestic calls, and call detail records, which is to say just the actual numbers dialed, so without other personal information attached. But, of course, that information can be cross-checked to get, you know, names, addresses, other personal data.
If traffic analysis, if pattern analysis shows that to be relevant.
So that's the thinking, yes. The scope and extent to which this is being used and how it's being used is still a bit of a question mark.
Now, what do we know about this program? How much does it cost? Who's paying for it?
Well, ultimately, United States taxpayers pay for it, but the cost of it and how the funding, NSA's budget is classified, everything about NSA is classified, including the number of employees who work there, so the budgets are also classified. And again, the parameters of the contracts under which these companies are working don't have detail on that as of yet.
So we don't know how big a program, and it sounds like a huge program involving potentially billions of telephone calls, but we don't know how much of the NSA's computer time is sucked up by that.
That would be correct. The NSA has tremendous capacity, and this, of course, would be one database of many that the agency would have access to. And it's very artful in deciphering and using information to cross-check to come up with other information. That's what NSA does.
Nor do we have much information about how useful it's been, whether this is in fact uncovered.
That's correct.
Links between al-Qaeda operatives and previously unknown al-Qaeda operatives. We don't know none of that.
Correct. And that is an area of great interest as to how useful or not this database has been. One would hope that to go to all this effort, they got something for it.
Now, according to your report, AT&T, Bell South, and Verizon voluntarily provided the government with phone records, and one company, Quest, refused, and it seems this was entirely voluntary. Quest, no penalties for Quest.
that would appear to be the case. Quest declined to do so because the company had some concerns about the legality of it and wanted additional comfort around that, because in this country there are substantial financial penalties for communications companies that divulge customer information illegally.
AT&T, meanwhile, faces a lawsuit filed by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which is a civil liberties group that accuses AT&T of helping the NSA spy on U.S. phone companies. And I guess this is just one piece of the fallout from your story.
That would be correct. There was also a fairly large loss class action filed against Verizon, I believe it was on Friday, a similar type of assertion.
And we're also going to see perhaps Verizon and the other companies hauled up before the Senate Judiciary Committee. We'll find out more about that later in the program when Senator Leahy joins us. But Arlen Specter, the chairman of the committee, said in part he wants to talk to the telephone companies because, well, they have to respond and show up, unlike some of the other U.S. intelligence agencies, which don't necessarily have to tell them anything.
Well, they do have to show up, but it's not clear they have to that they have to or that they could even legally divulge classified information. So that will be very interesting to see how that shakes out.
As you looked at the reaction of this, indeed the president very unusually coming out and talking about this story on Thursday, and then obviously everybody's been chewing on it all weekend long, and we're going to be continuing this week up to the hearings on Thursday. What's impressed you as it's come out over the past few days?
Well, you know, I guess just the level of discourse and this emotional response. There's been an emotional response, I think, and not surprising. I think that the international, I think it was a little easier maybe to digest only because it was international and you could put your arms around it. And I think this one, because it's domestic, it's home, it has just touched a raw nerve with people. And when you do a story like this, and this is it's a unique story, you don't know how it's going to be received. And clearly this has touched something, and it's just touched a nerve with people.
Also a question about timing. Was this story related in any way to General Hayden's nomination?
In no manner, shape, or form. I started working on this in earnest about 7 weeks ago, although I had, you know, following the Times, very fine reporting on the revelation of the international program. All of us, of course, were looking and poking around. I had a story in February talking about the participation of the actual phone companies and named them. But this came about. It's one thread led to the next. The timing was entirely serendipitous. As soon as we had it ready to go, we ran it.
Leslie Cawley, stay with us, if you will. Joining us now on the phone from Richmond, Virginia, is retired Admiral Bobby Ray Inman. Admiral Inman was Deputy Director of the Central Intelligence Agency from 1981 to 1982, then Director of the National Security Agency for 4 years, from 1977 to 1981. Thank you very much for being with us this afternoon.
Happy to be with you. And you're probably not going to be, Leslie's not going to be happy with my responses. I do not believe a massive NSA database exists, period. And I think ultimately a lot of wonderful reporting involved, but I think it's going to turn out to be for journalism the same equivalent of CIA's weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. I'd been approached by several journalists who had the same sort of leads, wanting to know what could be involved here. The reporting that tens of millions of Americans called, I just think is flatly invalid. And let me tell you why. NSA is not an analytical agency. They're a collection agency. What would be interesting to them, of enormous value to them, is where to look for potential foreign calls. If you were to tell me that a national security letter had asked them to provide all the phone numbers from which calls had been made from that region of the U.S. to Iraq or Iran or Afghanistan during a time frame, I would not be at all surprised, because you'd then want to know where might calls be coming back that computers could detect. But the idea that NSA is drowning in data, and the idea that there's any spare capacity to go take on huge, gigantic databases for functions that don't perform to their mission, just in fact does not track.
And this such a program as the one that was described in USA Today, this would be a massive undertaking?
It would be a huge undertaking. And then, you know, today's paper starts saying a majority of Americans disapprove of a massive Pentagon database containing the records of billions of American phone calls. Again, it's a leap into what I believe is just not valid. First, it's not Pentagon, National Security Agency, totally separate from the Pentagon. But much beyond that, they have no conceivable use for billions of phone calls. On the other hand, very precise information on phone numbers from which calls to overseas countries or locations that might be the home for terrorists would be of enormous value. Now, what's the problem with this discussion? We will have alerted potential terrorists that if they dial in to specific numbers in the U.S. from which calls were made out to them, those calls now may well be intercepted by NSA.
Well, we've got to go to a break in a minute or so, but I wanted to give Leslie Cawley a chance to respond. And feel free to use the phrase slam dunk, Leslie.
NSA is the largest, most sophisticated spy operation on the planet, and to suggest that this organization doesn't have the capacity to engage or use this data, that just doesn't track in my mind. I'm not going to engage in a debate.
Leslie, you're doing a wonderful job of trying to report, but on limited knowledge of what NSA's actual capacities are.
Well,
they are dramatically limited, and this image that they have unlimited capacity to take on massive databases to search for relatively little information just isn't valid.
Well, give her a chance to respond, if you would, Admiral.
Well, as I said, I'm not going to debate. I had offered to go through, in terms of stories, at my knowledge, based on what I know, based on reporting, and that's what I'm doing. But, we publish a story based on a lot of thorough vetting and thorough information, and that's what we published.
All right. We're going to take a short break. If you'd like to join our conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. Our subject is the NSA and surveillance. Our guests are Leslie Cawley, a reporter for USA Today, and retired Admiral Bobby Ray Inman, the former director of the National Security Agency. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. USA Today reported last week that the National Security Agency has secretly collected phone records, not calls, but records of tens of millions of Americans. The report brought an almost immediate response from the White House, which defended the program. Today, the dispute over the NSA's data collection, is it legal, is it effective? And, well, as we're talking now with Bobby Ray Inman, who used to direct the NSA, is it even going on? Our guests are Admiral Bobby Ray Inman, former admiral, former director of the NSA, and Leslie Cawley, the reporter for USA Today, who wrote last week's story. And, of course, you're invited to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And Admiral Inman, let me just ask you another question about this. I want to go also into the warrantless wiretap operation. You say this is, in your opinion, this is not going on and would not be conducted by NSA?
Now, the parts that are not going on first, I do not believe billions of telephone records have been provided, or even tens of millions. Second, NSA does not maintain a massive database of all American telephone numbers or numbers called. I just don't believe that's valid at all. They have, not only do they not have spare computing capacity to go after this kind of evolution, their focus is always on where do you find what you need to target from foreign calls. What you want to know is if a call is coming from a suspect area, what numbers are they likely to be calling?
And that's the information that they would then provide to other intelligence services, if asked.
If NSA were an analytical agency, then I would have great worry about them accumulating a database of information on Americans and keeping it. They aren't.
Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. Our number, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's start with Joan calling us from Roanoke, Virginia.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
My question is for Mr. Inman. And while I was on hold, he may have answered this question. I'm not sure. But I'm just curious as to why, if the NSA doesn't need all this information, why did they go to these particular phone companies and request it?
But see, I don't believe they did. I believe they asked for very select information, much, much smaller quantities, wanting to know how many calls were made from Virginia to Afghanistan or Iran in a given month, where they were looking for then what calls might come back. We're probably talking about calls here in the few thousands, not millions. So, but the image that's been left again with the public is there's this massive domestic spying operation, and it's just not valid.
Leslie Cawley, did you get information that contradicts that from the telephone companies?
The information I got on the entire exercise is what we published, and that's what we laid out.
All right. Joan, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And Admiral Inman, I wanted to move on to another part of the NSA program, the warrantless wiretap program, where
right.
If one person's in this country and another person's overseas, one of them is believed to be associated in some way with al-Qaeda, that the according to the president's authorization, those calls and emails can be intercepted without going to a special court to get permission to do that.
I helped get the FISA court created. We were looking at foreign countries, foreign entities, organizations of states. Never envisioned a world where individuals would be traveling in this country, coming in on legal documentation, training, planning, actually conducting terrorist attacks, moving money back and forth. So we didn't construct in FISA a world to go after terrorist kinds of targets. So I have no problem with the president authorizing immediately after 9/11, are there other potential terrorists here beyond the 20 who conducted the attacks on 9/11? I do have a problem in continuing to rely on that over time and not going back to seek modifications of the FISA rule. There are those who say we didn't need the FISA court in the first place, that it was perfectly legitimate for inherent presidential authority. I'm no constitutional expert. But what I do know is that the intelligence agencies function better when there are clear laws that they can operate under. And I believe you could construct the legislative change you needed, and I don't understand why the reluctance to go do it.
Stay with us, if you would, Admiral Inman. Joining us now from Capitol Hill is Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont, the top Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee. And Senator Leahy, good of you to join us today.
Good to be with you, Neil. I heard the last part of what Admiral Inman is saying. He is familiar with the operations of our intelligence services as anybody I've ever worked with, and he knows that oversight is important.
Let me ask you another question about what he was saying earlier. He does not believe that there is a massive data bank of American phone records, and indeed that the scale of the operation is quite a bit smaller than was reported last week in the papers.
Well, I have not been briefed on what is there. It's going to be a major question. I think that the first thing we have to do is know exactly what is happening, because if it's as it was described in the paper, I question how useful that is. It's almost like drinking from a fire hose. You know, we had at one time, they wanted to have this so-called total information awareness program, and Congress said no, that would have a major data bank on just about everybody in this country. We didn't see how you could possibly have oversight of that. I want to make sure they're not doing it in the backdoor way. I think that you still go back to some of the basic intelligence. We know that, for example, they had a lot of information that might have prevented 9/11, and it wasn't acted upon. In fact, some of the material wasn't translated till the day after 9/11. We have to have more translators. We have to have more analysts. But I don't think it makes us any safer if we have something that is collecting data on virtually every American. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why one of the phone companies refused to go along with this.
The Quest company, yes.
Yes. Well, and in fact, our Judiciary Committee is going to ask, we're going to have the various phone companies in, and we're going to say, you know, did you have a subpoena? Did you have, was this under color of law? Why did you do this? But I think I want to know, why did one company say no? And if this was so important to our security, why didn't the government say, wait a minute, we really want you to do it?
Let's get another listener on the line. This is Anna. Anna's calling us from Kilvert, Ohio.
Yeah, hi. You know, if the Bush administration has nothing to hide, I would just think they should welcome an investigation. And I know Senator Pat Roberts has stated that some senators have been briefed about the program. And if senators are unable, the ones that have been briefed are unable to talk about the program, how can anyone call this congressional oversight? And my other question is there any indication that any other nations have access to the NSA program?
Let me answer that one, if I may, quickly. First,
go ahead, Admiral Edelman.
Nations do not have access. But secondly, congressional oversight, in my view, is a critically important function for the intelligence agencies. I worked hard to create it. The reason is so much of the information is classified to protect sources and methods. You get into any public discussion, you run a risk of alerting potential targets so that they don't use the communications. But in turn, Congress does have to do it in a structure where they are comfortable that, first, that they're getting all the relevant info. On the other hand, they protect the information on sources and methods. So in this case, the Congressional Oversight Committees are a surrogate for all of us, and we've got to count on them to have effective oversight. And if they aren't getting the information they need to do that, then the system's not working well.
Senator Leahy?
I think on that, Neil, I totally agree with what Admiral Inman said, but in this particular case, this goes more to the question of the caller. I've talked with at least two of the people whom I respect greatly who are on that small subcommittee, and they don't feel they've been briefed thoroughly. They feel that they're continuously learning more in the press, some of which is accurate, some of which isn't, and I won't go into which ones they consider accurate and which ones they consider inaccurate, but they feel that a great deal gets held back. I worry when we have amended FISA a number of times. In fact, I've written amendments at the request of both this administration and the previous administration to make it more usable. But nobody came and said, we need changes for wiretapping or anything else. And I think that there's a lot that goes on that, well, we need to do this to keep us secure. That argument can always be made, and our own government can become more and more powerful, and our privacy can become less and less. We know what happens when they make mistakes in the databanks. We have law-abiding Americans can't get on an airplane without jumping through all kinds of hoops because their names are on watch lists. Senator Edward Kennedy was stopped nearly a dozen times from getting on the plane. Even the president called him to apologize, and he said, I don't need the apology, just get my name off the darn list. They couldn't do it. They couldn't figure out how to do it. You have nuns who have been stopped. You've had year-old children who have been stopped. It's obviously not the person they're supposed to be, but once you get on one of these lists, it's almost impossible to get it off, and if the lists are being kept in secret, there are going to be a lot of people going to find they don't get a job promotion. They can't get a scholarship in college. They can't get loans or something. They'll never know why, but it's because they somehow, by mistake, got on one of these lists.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Leahy, may I ask another question?
This is Leslie Cawley of USA Today. Go ahead, Leslie. Oh, I'm sorry. Is this Anna? I'm sorry. I thought it was Leslie.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I wanted to ask Senator Leahy. I know during the John Bolton hearings, Senator Kerry and Biden were asking for NSA transcripts having to do with some of the wiretapping that John Bolton was allegedly doing. So I'm wondering if there was an investigation, would those transcripts that Kerry and Biden were demanding come up in this investigation?
I don't know the answer to that. I know they never were able to get it, and that's why.
And it was a different program.
Yeah. So
unfortunately, this one wouldn't surface that. It relates, though, to the whole issue of how you deal with minimization of information on Americans that you get either inadvertently or knowingly. And this, again, is something that Congress has worked at oversight on and worked at it pretty hard, but it's not 100% effective.
No, and unfortunately what's happening, we're having now more and more things are just being classified. We have things in the been in the National Archives for years available to scholars, and all of a sudden they're marked classified. We've had matters that have been on for weeks on government websites. As soon as we announce we're going to have a hearing about some of the things involved, they classify the things that have been on the website available to everybody around the world. So you can't have a real oversight hearing, certainly not in public, about something that was open. I worry that when we're now reaching a bill of several billion dollars a year in classifying things, most people I've talked with at the CIA and elsewhere say we're classifying far, far too much.
Anna, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And Senator, I know you have to leave us. We appreciate your time today.
Neil, good to be with you. Bobby, good to hear your voice.
Thank you. Good to hear yours, sir.
All right.
Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont, joining us from Capitol Hill. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here's an email question we got from Gavin. Mr. Inman is right that this data is useless without a second layer of database matching. This means calls of suspect people have to be cross-referenced to DMV records, ownership records, billing records, police and court records. The primary problem everyone has, writes Gavin, is that when these data searches turn up information on non-terrorist activities, tax fraud, deadbeat dads, outstanding warrants, or traffic tickets, is this information compiled and passed on in any way to other government agencies to follow up on? This, he writes, is the true danger and slippery slope of the process. I bet if it's not done now, it will be. Admiral Inman, is there...
I agree with Gavin's basic assumption. NSA does not have access to driver's license information, all the rest of that. FBI clearly could if it were a prospective criminal case. From time to time in the past, there have been CIAs who would like to have had it, but in fact, they don't have access. When I had an employee who was dealing with Libyan intelligence, IRS could not give me any information as director of NSA, but they could give the information to congressional committees. But NSA does not have access to all the other information you would need to correlate it, nor are they about to get it.
Let's get another call in. This is from Jason. Jason with us from Cary, North Carolina.
Yes, I work with a software company, and I manage millions and millions of customer data on a database. And let me tell you, if you have a phone number, that's all you need to track, find, get someone's information. It's one step in just hunting down someone. And I feel like I'm given information that's more like Animal Farm information than it's just a big government claiming ignorance.
Well,
and it's just not the case.
No, well, let's take it a step beyond. Every time you get on the Internet, a wide variety of people track everywhere you go, every stop you make on the Internet,
mm-hmm.
to use for commercial purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the concern about privacy? What is the concern about the government getting information which might actually relate to foreign terrorists, but every move, every step you make on the Internet being tracked by a number of potential commercial users doesn't cause any public uproar?
No, it causes public uproar with me. And
good.
It bothers me a step further that the government is actually doing the same thing, and therefore...
I don't believe the government is doing the same thing.
If one private company can do it, you don't think the government can actually do it? If they don't request this first layer, they can't request another? I know people that work with telecommunications that say they're one step away from being able to find where people are via their cell phone.
Yeah.
Well, now, I see the benefits of that.
Yeah.
If you get into a crime or an emergency...
The heart of the challenge here is this image out of movies and television that NSA is this gargantuan organization with unlimited people and computer resources to follow anything that might be a whim, and it's just a fiction. It is not valid.
Admiral Inman, I know you also have to leave us. We thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Bye.
Retired Admiral Bobby Ray Inman, former director of the National Security Agency, spoke with us on the phone from Richmond, Virginia. When we come back from a break, we'll talk more with Leslie Cawley of USA Today about the extent of NSA snooping, about the reaction to last week's story, which has stirred up a hornet's nest here in Washington, D.C., plus calling it genocide in Darfur, the Talk of the Nation opinion page. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. In a few minutes, the Talk of the Nation opinion page, an argument that calling killing in Darfur a genocide is both misleading and counterproductive. As always, we'd like to hear from you on the opinion page. Is it genocide or not? What is the import of using that word? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. But first, back to phone records, privacy, and the NSA. Leslie Cawley of USA Today is still with us. She wrote about the NSA's collection of America's phone records last week in the newspaper. And Admiral Inman, who's so determined, wanted to give you a chance to say that again. You stand by your reporting on this story.
Well, yes, we do. As I said, try to vet and cross-check, and we play this straight down the middle in terms of how we presented information, and that is our best information. That's what we published.
Mm-hmm. And as other information has come out, do you see this story of the data bank and this pattern analysis of these anonymized phone records? Does it seem to be consistent with other patterns of intelligence searching, do you think?
The technique of using massive amounts of information and calling out, pulling out pertinent data to be used in a very specific fashion, yes, that's what NSA does. And it does so very admirably and to great effect and has for many years. But that's what NSA does. I find the Admiral's pronouncement that the agency doesn't have access to licenses, driver's licenses, interesting, given that this agency is known for its ability to pull out and have access to all sorts of information. This is what NSA does, and I would find it very difficult to believe NSA couldn't get my driver's license number if it so chose.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Ben. Ben in Durham, North Carolina.
Hi there.
Go ahead, please.
My question was from Ms. Cawley. I first wanted to thank her for her excellent job in reporting this story. And I guess I was sort of, I guess my question was, okay, when the New York Times came out with the story in December, they said, you know, some people were criticizing them for letting the terrorists know that they're being watched, and I found that ridiculous because why wouldn't they think that? I guess my concern here is, do you think it was wise to specifically reveal which phone companies were cooperating and which were not? Because this actually might point them to say, hey, we should go with Quest.
We gave very careful deliberation and thought to this story overall. Every sentence, every statement of fact, we were very thoughtful, and we felt in the context of, you know, the current debate, the discussion over the international campaign, we felt we would simply present the information in, and it has sparked this public discourse on this issue that hopefully will have, you know, a good impact at the end. But we did not hold back. Things we could say with impunity, we put out there, and the onus is sort of in the public forum now, and that will be debated again as to what happens, if anything. That will be decided elsewhere. But, you know, we don't view our that's sort of not our function. We simply put the information out there.
Okay.
Ben, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And Leslie, I do have to ask, news organizations from time to time on stories that affect national security sources and methods run the idea past various administration officials to see if there's some screamingly important reason they shouldn't run this story or get reaction or at least a heads up. Was anything like that done in this case?
Absolutely. To the extent that we called 2 days before, we started having a dialogue with the White House and with the NSA about this story and the specifics contained herein. And we were very specific as far as what we were saying and shared quite liberally. So, yes, we were very interested in that vantage point, in that viewpoint, and wanted to hear what both had to say before we proceeded. And that was very much a part of our process.
Okay, Leslie, thanks very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Leslie Cauley, a reporter for USA Today, who wrote the cover story last week reporting that the NSA has compiled telephone calling records for tens of millions of Americans involving billions of phone calls. Coming up, the Talk of the Nation opinion page, genocide and Darfur.